have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, back with the after show with Richard Mowry. He is the president, Management Services and Development Limited. Richard, how was the first episode, the first conversation for you?
I enjoy being with you, and hopefully we delivered some information that everybody can use. So I'm happy to do that.
I loved it. If anyone watches this, if they see me looking down, I'm always taking notes. It goes to something you said in the first episode, which is the growth mindset. Like, I'm a huge note taker. I just always am. Might not ever look at those notes again. These I do, but like, I just love writing things and reading things and learning things. And so like, there's just so much that you shared, and it was great for anyone tuning into this. Maybe you're like, I just want to check out the shorter after show. Definitely go back and listen to that main episode. There was so much we covered on valuations, mindset, humans, things that cause people to not exit, all of those different factors. We talked about marketing and growth tips. All of Richard's links will be in these show notes. They're also in that show notes. We'll mention them at the end. But for this show, for the after show, normally we have some of the questions, but we got to jump into something we didn't get to in the first part, which is the deal that got away. Now, I said you probably have an infinite number, and you're like, hold on. And I know, like, again, from my mind, I'm thinking like the stories, the war stories, there's got to be a ton of them. But obviously, I know that you're in the bracket of what I would call the high quality professional brokers, which is definitely not everyone out there, where your listing to close ratio is really high, 90%+, because you're selective on who you take to market, because you don't want to take something to market that's not right, going to have a chance of selling. However, in that is the 10%. It's also the people who maybe didn't list. There's the other things that I'm sure you've seen. You focus mostly on valuations now, so probably what you've seen in other people's transactions. What comes to mind in the category of the deal that got away as a cautionary tale?
Well, there's certainly those where I had difficulty getting engagement because of the owner's advisors. Mm. Sometimes they saw me as a competitor, and that would have been my deficiency in not, pointing out that isn't what I was there to do. I'm there to help the owner. One tip for brokers is when you have other advisors, once you're in the deal, to the extent that you can provide little projects that they can do to help the deal, that brings them closer to you as well. So, if there's some financial analysis the CPA can do, that helps. So, ask the owner to say, can you ask your CPA to do this? And if the CPA knows that came from you, that's a plus. So, but there were different times that happened. There also were a couple of times where I'm very careful with the agreements we have that my legal advisors have worked out for me. And there were some things that I would not bend on in my engagement agreement. And so there were a couple of times that I didn't get an engagement that I really wanted to do, where I thought I could do a great job, because their attorney was just insistent that they take out an indemnification clause or some other clause like that. And if for the brokers out there, if you don't have an indemnification clause in your agreement, you might consider that. And what my attorney says, he says, Richard, we're putting this in because it doesn't matter, what happens if you win the case. If, if you get sued, you're out of business while we settle it, and you're probably out of pocket a large amount of money. So, that I put that in, but more importantly, so that you never have to exercise that clause, is good client selection. That's the best insurance. Good client selection. Make sure you know who you're doing business with, and make sure they knew who they're doing business with, and that everybody is respectful and has the integrity to follow through the way they're promising. I really didn't have problems with clients at all. I got bonuses a couple of times that weren't even part of the transaction. So I was blessed with some really good people like that. But there was a transaction that did get away from me, or I let it go because I just didn't understand. It was earlier in my career. It was a nice size computer business in another state. And I was there working on it, trying to get it in the fold and get the opportunity to sell it. And, you know, I had kind of sized the value for the owners. They weren't happy. There were five owners and it just wasn't enough money. And we kept looking. I said, you know, we can't, you know, you can run the business for another 5 years and maybe we can get something in that range, but not today. And so what I didn't understand was that the right strategic buyer would pay that price or more. And another broker came along and he understood what could happen. And he packaged up the business and he found a couple people, and one in particular that really wanted the business. It was another computer business, slightly larger, not a lot larger, that had four or five really good software products they developed, and they were looking for, you know, the right big customer to put them in to give them the stamp of approval. And this potential client of mine actually had that client as one of their customers. Now, I saw their largest customer as a risk factor. They had a 50% customer. This broker and this buyer saw that as a huge asset. So it's about getting the right mindset and thinking things through. Okay, where can I maximize value? How can I make this work? That 50% customer said that this little business had a really good relationship with that customer. And if I acquired the business, I was going to be on the inside so I could bring my four or five really good software products inside that business and make it work. And that's exactly what happened. They sold that business at almost four times what I thought I could get in the market
for. Wow.
But that was my lack of vision or thinking about what I saw as a risk factor, one big customer. The other broker saw as an asset to be used to do a strategic deal. And he did a great job for that customer. All five of those people went to work for the new business, and three of them stayed there for quite a long time.
Huh. Which goes back to, you had mentioned something in the first episode where we were talking about that, where, you know, the strategic buyer that wants to roll things up and maybe acquire some talent and stuff like that. And you see that, or a customer base or a piece of technology, and there's more value in this kind of like not standard category of value, which sounds like that's what you found out.
Right. And, you know, this is not my transition. A good friend of mine in Canada had a deal where he was selling a nice manufacturing business. They had a price range as is quite often done today. He took it to market without a price and, exposed it to a number of qualified buyers. And two of those qualified buyers, their initial offer was significantly above what they thought the value of the company was. So they took it off the market, said, there's something we don't know here, something we don't understand. And as it turned out, this business had a very proprietary and effective manufacturing process that these other businesses wanted to acquire. And so, it's about asking those questions. Sometimes the owners don't actually know that.
Wow.
And so they figured that out, put it back in the market, and it sold for double their original valuation to one of those two strategic buyers. So strategic buyers, there's nothing wrong with them. You just need to understand their motivation and what they're going to do with the business afterwards. And it's the broker's responsibility to sort that out, because all buyers will tell you what you think they think you want to hear. In some way, You're looking for the buyer who can actually do it and follow through, has the intent to do it, and actually has the ability to do it. Sometimes a buyer will say they'll do something, but in the end, they don't have the ability to follow through. So that's a broker's responsibility to sort that out and to get that buyer that'll follow through so that the seller knows exactly what to expect. Doesn't mean it absolutely will do that, happen that way every time, but you want to be relatively sure that you know what you're selling and know what the activity is going to be for the community employees after the transaction.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, as you're talking about the manufacturing plus you know, your own experience where, owners heads down in the business, like we were talking about where, you know, they're too focused in the business, maybe not thinking long-term. They don't even see what they have or they've built. They're violating all the principles of the E-Myth Revisited, like we talked about. And, you don't even know what you're sitting on and, you know, the value out there in the market.
Yeah. Yeah. I did, we talked in the first session about doing buyer searches. I did the search for a client, and the client, again, in the manufacturing area, the client was absolutely sure they had a more effective manufacturing business than some of their competitors. So they thought they could acquire some of these smaller competitors, put their template of manufacturing on and have some cost savings. They were right. They were better than their manufacturers, but what we eventually found out was their competitive advantage was not in the manufacturing, not on the plant floor. It was in their office. Their admin and sales process was half the cost of their competitors and much more effective. So again, owners can build great businesses that really work, and sometimes they don't know exactly what makes it really special.
It just works.
But once you understand that, then you can apply that template and you can do that acquisition and, you know, put that better admin and selling process in there, and have a nice package, with some additional, financial benefit for the acquirer.
I think that's great. All right. Next question. We're going to roll into some of the topics here in the after show. So you've been in and around this game for 30 plus years. When we look at 5 years from now, 2031, which is crazy to think about, that's in 5 years from now, is what do you think business brokers will need to be doing to succeed in 5 years?
I think they'll need to become much better at interpersonal relationships and understanding how businesses fit together. So that the personal structure and building a trust and so forth, and also the actual structure of transactions, where those businesses fit. Businesses are going to change, as we know, with AI. Manufacturing businesses probably will be less impacted certainly in the manufacturing process. They'll have some impact in admin and sales, probably in marketing. But I think a business broker, you know, ought to be working on all those skills, that learning how to really support the owner and having good negotiating skills. You know, the AI will lever the playing field on who knows what, I think. You know, there won't be as many facts that somebody knows that somebody else doesn't know in negotiations as there are today, not just in brokerage, but in all fields. But knowing how to dig down and make a deal is going to be the real skill. There's going to be a lot of matchmaking with digital processes probably in this area. People be suggesting that they can, you know, sell your business. You just have to fill out a form and let them do it. I suspect that those are deals that probably don't ever get actually closed many times. And if they do close, they may be a disaster for either the buyer or the seller or both. So I think the broker will have a more important role in the future than he or she does today, but it's going to be a slightly different role.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I say this a lot where I think the role of technology when used properly, especially in business, should lead to where the only remaining thing to do as a human is to interact with other humans and help them, right? Like form relationships and find a way to help people, because everything else should be handled from, like, let's say an admin level and a technology level. And think of, you know, what you were saying in the first part about the resources it took and the cost it took to get some of the information needed for evaluation versus what's available now, and how quickly someone can put together a sim now that's accurate, professional, versus, you know, how long it took in the past, which should just leave the human to human element. And I think that's spot on. I love that you led with that. And then also understanding the transactional side and business structures and being able to then apply the human element to this complex thing that's not just a, right, you know, a transaction of ordering something on Amazon.
Yeah, business brokers, as we discussed earlier, really do take the lead in solving problems to get deals closed. And that's a matter of understanding the transaction and the structure and being creative at times to bridge a particular gap that's open on responsibility or price or some other risk factor that needs to be mitigated. So, you know, that detective work, if you will, you know, is a skill set that needs to be there.
Yeah. Okay. So then when we think about it, and obviously you've seen a lot, when we look at the technology question, what's the biggest thing right now in the business brokerage space when it comes to technology?
If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business.
In the business brokerage space when it comes to technology?
Well, I think we're going to see, and I don't know how well they're going to be, a lot of valuation tools and techniques and things that are presented to be used. And I'm not opposed to that as long as it's a reasonable representation of work and it's properly characterized as early valuation work to develop a range for discussion and then maybe refinement with actual more formal work with professionals and with tools. But I think there's going to be a lot of tools out there that purport to deliver something it isn't going to be delivered, but they will deliver something that could be useful when properly characterized and used, both by brokers and owners, in terms of initiating early planning. Because again, the last thing an owner wants to find is that they worked a lifetime and that their business has little or no value. So yeah, to the extent that they can get some early input on that, that should be productive, even if it isn't as well-rounded and as detailed as I might like to see it. And it gets them into gear and gets them to start talking to good advisors who can take them to the next level of preparation, then it'll be an acceptable thing for us to have. I think AI is going to be used and misused in all kinds of different ways. I can't imagine what's happening. There are certainly abilities. I was looking actually the other day, because I am sort of retired, as you know. I was just curious what I could find out in terms of, you know, if I asked one of the AI models, you know, give me a list of the top 100 manufacturers within 250 miles of my office, it'll give me a list. You know, now that was a list that took time and effort to get. Now, it may not have been a good list, you know, may not have been the best list, but it was a list. And so I think learning how to effectively use AI will make the advisor's job significantly better in terms of getting that information early if they're astute enough to not accept it, but to work with it and develop it. And again, to understand what they have, that it may be substandard, but it's a starting point that gets you 2/3 of the way up the ladder with less time and effort. And then you really do need to work on getting the other 1/3 up there to get the right list and the right potential customers or potential buyers. I think the tools are there to do some of those things, but the human thinking, strategizing, and effort is what's going to make it valuable or disastrous as we go ahead over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I think what's so valuable from what you said too was that the first part with like the valuation piece is that if you're going to use any technology or any models where it's like in an automated way, the disclaimer or the expectation of what you're getting and where that fits into the process versus like fully detailed, right? Like,
yeah.
Looking something up online on WebMD and then solving your own medical issues versus going to a doctor, right? And in some cases, you look something up online, okay, great, this is what I have, I can handle this myself, right? And then there's other times it's like, I need to go to the doctor. And if we think about this, like this transaction is so complex, like this is not a self-service, self-help, do-it-yourself model.
Yeah, that's a good example. You know, the web can either help you get thinking in the right area or formulate a question to ask a professional like your doctor. And I think that's what I'm suggesting here. The resources we have should help business owners get into gear that way. And
yeah,
business owners can present that information and be ready to take it to the next step that they can benefit both their client and their own offices.
Yeah, that's great. So right now we're recording this midway through the year, July, towards the end of July, 2026. So normally I would ask like, what are you excited about last year? We could talk about the last 12 months. We could talk about the first 7 months of this year. For you, Rich, what did you learn most from, let's say, the first part of this year?
Well, something I knew for a long time. You know, I've been looking and watching, and back in the 90s, we did a lot of live seminars for business owners. And it was a good source. Now, some of the people who attended those seminars were referred to me there. Now, they were all sponsored seminars by banks or legal firms or CPA firms. Occasionally, they were, you know, by the local SBA attached to a college. But as I was been looking at things this spring and you know, talking to some younger brokers that I do from time to time, I think people are ready for some live, interactive, educational opportunities. Those events that we used to do before the webinar world overwhelmed the system. And so I would encourage brokers to develop good, high-quality content for events like that, and for business owners to search for ones that will work well for them, to get them educated and to get them on the right track and to advance their thinking on this transition that may not take place for a decade or two in some cases, but I think it's important. And some people may not go to a in-person seminar because they're concerned about confidentiality.
Right.
We presented a seminar, must have been early 2000s, and it was actually was a couple hundred miles from where I'm sitting. You know, we did we had a sponsor, and the sponsor brought the people in, and two people walked in the room, called them Jack and Bob. Jack and Bob had each driven 100 miles from another location to that site. They are next door neighbors, and they each own a nice business in that town. So, you know, they looked at each other and laughed and smiled, and but you know, in general, it is a lot more confidential situation than you might add. And that particular situation didn't cause any problem. It actually made them good potential clients because they both understood and they could talk to each other about what was going on confidentially and what they learned at that seminar and what they were going to do about it. But it can still be a very confidential, and if the seminar is properly contentful and has good information and has a title that is not obtrusive, to increase the value of your business, which is a good topic and good content. It's something that business owners can engage with, gain from, and get started on that longer journey down the road.
Yeah. And I think those are the keys. Like when I think about events like that and, you know, it could be virtual webinars too. It could be, online meetings, but in that in-person mode. Yeah. This is what I always tell people and our clients is like, it's gotta be value focused and value driven for the audience that basically has nothing to do with you or what you're hoping they might hire you for, but just giving them value. And in this case here, playing the confidentiality side, you don't want to have an event where everyone's like parking in the back. They hope nobody sees them, and they hope they don't run into any competitors or any of their employees hear about. It's like, no, let's just make it. This isn't a multi-level marketing pitch where people are worried about coming. It's just coming to an event and a seminar.
Good and then, content and, yeah. and getting you in gear, getting yeah. you, getting you to trip that lever, so forth. But
yeah, and that's where the exit planning conversation that seems to be more and more public, right? Think of like companies like Exit Factor and ones like that, and brokers who are just like again playing that 3 to 5 years with their clients, where it's like you need to do the following things. You have the 11-year guy, but it's like that conversation isn't you're looking to sell, and you don't want to know. This is a how do you increase the value of your business?
I think there's a certainly a level of understanding that if you are planning for succession, that means you're planning for the future continuity of the business, which should benefit customers, employees, and the community as well. So, succession planning doesn't have the, hard exit ring that it might have had 25 years ago.
And where if you're going to things or you're focused on increasing value, that's generally better for everybody, all the stakeholders involved.
Yeah. Increase value and plan a succession that's good for everybody involved. So you mentioned confidentiality a minute ago, and good advisors work hard on confidentiality, but it can be broken anywhere along the way. And, sellers should be aware of that and be careful. We do work hard as brokers to maintain that and to do the right things. And we have a lot of tools and techniques with cloud distribution of information and different gates and so forth. So, the average business owner should be comfortable that that's being maintained, but it can be broken anytime. I had a client that I had been working with actually for a couple years on improving the value of his business. And I would be in his office several times a year, and we'd go to lunch at the local diner, and he would let me pay, which I always offered. And this day, he says, "I'll pay today, Richard. You've been paying." So we go to the checkout, and the guy comes there with his whites on because he's the owner of the little diner. He's all in his kitchen stuff, and my owner says, "Jack, I want you to meet Richard. He's going to help me sell my business." Like, boom. So I said, that's right. Way down the road someday when you think you're ready. Right now, we just got to keep talking about golf like we did at lunch. And it ended right there. But stuff can happen. Things were on his mind. It just came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
It can happen. But as a professional, you got to be able to handle it. And as an owner, you got to know that it's not the end of the world if something does happen. Because what you're doing is okay. It's, and particularly if you planned well for it and it's going to help everybody involved, just be comfortable with it. So, yeah. You know,
yeah, it sounds like it's a, let's protect it. Let's avoid it at all costs. If something happens with the confidentiality, it's also okay. I mean, going to the fact, you know, I know one of the big things that comes up is you sell your business, a buyer buys it, they buy it with the team and with the customers. And unless you've got like some strict policies, which usually aren't enforceable in the US, like people could leave at a moment. So you're buying it today, that doesn't mean it's going to be the same next week. Right. And so the confidentiality, like if people find out they're going to freak out in advance, they were going to freak out afterwards.
Right. And you know, as a professional broker, you know how to mitigate those things. You know how to communicate that and, you know, reassure those customers about who the buyer is at the right time in the right way so that there's significant less risk of that actually happening and both hurting the buyer and you know, hurting them. Because the real loser there is the employees whose jobs disappear.
Yeah.
And if you're sensitive to that and if those customers are sensitive with the good work that those employees have been doing over the years, they're much less likely to overreact to a transition.
Yeah. I mean, customers want what they want and they want the value right. that they're paying for. And if that continues, then everything just continues and it's okay. Right. It's when right. the value of the product changes, like that, you know, think of a diner that sells and the new owner doesn't get it and doesn't understand what was in place and made the place special, right? As that example, then that's when everything starts to go bad.
Yeah. And typically that happens pretty infrequently. And you can make it even less so by just communicating that the owner, the current owner, planned a orderly succession with everything in place to make sure you're taken care of as a customer. And because we know that not only important, you're important to customer, but what you order from us employs the people who've been doing that work for you for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And I know you care about them the same way we do. So it's all in an important package and good communication like that. And that's part of the brokers, how you facilitate that and work with your owner. And there'd be some of those calls the owner will make, some of those calls you might make as a broker.
Yeah. And I think that's a great place to end our conversation on. And it ties back to what we've spoken about many times, which is the role of the broker for the relationships, for the trust, and then just managing the process, right? Being that person that's facilitating everything, handling the emotions that go into it. We talked about it in the first conversation with owners and what are they going to do next and all of that stuff when right. dealing with them. And, you know, that's basically what it should be about. I know brokers get really busy in the transactional stuff and the technology stuff and the, you know, all of those things. But really at the end of the day, kind of like you said, in 5 years from now, it's going to be the human element.
Yeah. If you always, as a broker and an owner, think about all the people involved, it'll be clear what the right thing is to do.
I love it. That's a great way to end. Richard, I appreciate you being here. For everyone tuning in, again, all of your links will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn. Your website is richmowry.com. There's also mergermentor.com. Books are on Amazon. Everything is everywhere. You're very easy to find. You've done a great job with the fact that you're theoretically semi-retired. You're posting regularly and you're coming on shows like this to give and give and give. And so I just appreciate you once again spending extra time with us today.
Good. Nice to be here with you.
And for everyone tuning in, thank you for being here. Hopefully you got some value. Make sure to share this. If you didn't, check out part one in the conversation we had there, because that was a lot of value. If you thought this was great, that was equally amazing. There was so much that he shared with all of us. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.